Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into a Thursday edition of Jake and Stacy. I'm Stacy Ross. He's Jake Heaps. You can listen to us, obviously, on 710 ESPN Seattle. And also, don't forget, you can watch the live stream on 710sports.com/video, where you can see me in the 710 stew. That's what we in the biz call the studio, Jake. Jake Heaps in his San Diego hotel room, in which multiple people have previously called you out for not making the bed that's behind you. And I have noticed in show prep that you make it now.
Yes. I after I got called out, I realized that it's not good form to show up on the live stream and not have my bed made. So
I
make sure I get it done just for you, the people. And Stacy, I think you're showing up with a certain vibe today. I mean, you showed up with the curls today.
Yeah, I showed up with natural hair today. Didn't heat style. It's too hot. I'm on the third floor. I was miserable. I am not a hot weather person. I can't do it.
You know what drives me nuts about Washingtonians? You know what drives me insane?
That they hate on people who use umbrellas?
No, not at all. It's a very valid point that I agree with them. Show some toughness. But really what it is we complain all year long.
Oh,
it's
part of
my
brand.
Sunny, it's not hot, it's
well,
I can't wait for the summer. And then when the summer hits and that heat comes, it's when can this stop? It's too hot. I can't handle this.
We are all tiny avocados.
Come on.
There is a certain temperature range in which we are happy. Anything outside of that, we're miserable and we complain about it. It's just who we are. It's who we are at our core. I can't fight it. I don't fight it. The only thing I don't fit in with is I do use an umbrella regularly, and I refuse to shame anyone who does. And anyone with curly hair can understand me on that one. Now we're all having fun this morning, and we are going to have a fun show. We have a special guest joining us at 11:30. You guys are going to be very excited about him. You will recognize who it is immediately the second he begins speaking. We also have a really interesting conversation to get to about offensive philosophy. Some great news for the Kraken. Some bad news this morning, though, Jake, for the Mariners. And that doesn't include the news that they got yesterday that Justin Dunn was heading to the 10-day IL. I mean, so good news, 10-day IL, but that doesn't always have to mean 10 days. This team is so snake-bitten, I don't know what it is. You get one outfielder back, someone else leaves. You get Marco back, another starting pitcher leaves. I don't know what's happening, but they unfortunately got more bad news this morning. So Jerry Dipoto, general manager, was on with Danny and Gallant. He's asked how Kyle Lewis is doing. Kyle Lewis, if you guys remember, had to leave the game the other day, felt soreness in the same knee that he had injured in spring training. Scott Servais told us on the Scott Servais show on Tuesday that it was a small tear in his meniscus. This is the latest update from Dipoto.
I would imagine so. You know, much like we experienced coming out of spring training, anything that we do with Kyle, we're going to make sure that we're hypersensitive to the needs. And we want him to have a long career here in Seattle and to thrive. And my guess is that is going to result this time in a bit of a prolonged absence. I am hopeful that we'll see him again this year on the field, but I don't think it's going to be quick. So we're going to take our time, identify how we can help. And Kyle needs to make some decisions on what he wants to do. But again, I don't think this is going to be days and weeks. I think it's going to be longer than that.
Jake, saying I'm hopeful he can be back this year is not actually great news. Like, it is not good to hear in June. Hopefully he can be back sometime before September 30th.
Definitely not ideal, Stacy. I would agree with you on that. And it's devastating news. Like, it honestly is. You were starting to see Kyle Lewis really get comfortable at the plate. He's really starting to settle into his own and really becoming one of those mainstays for this team, a reliable mainstay at center field, at the plate, and obviously a big part of the rebuilding process and the optimism that has been there for this rebuild. One of the first stars, one of the first bright moments has been Kyle Lewis. And it's just really unfortunate that he is dealing with these injuries at such a young age, and you really do get concerned about an athlete that's already having knee problems, already struggling to stay healthy with his knee, mm-hmm. and a lot of factors that he just is, it's outside of his control. They're freak injuries that things happen. And you know, the one thing that is positive though, and it's dependent on obviously the second opinion that Kyle Lewis gets, but does he have surgery or not? And surgery, if he goes down that road, the recovery process can be anywhere from 1 to 3 months. It seems to be more along the 2 to 3 month timeline, from the sounds of Jerry DePoto. But if he decides to not get the surgery, maybe he can come back a little bit sooner. But it's definitely a big-time bummer for the Mariners, and they are completely snake-bitten when it comes to injuries this season. It's really frustrating because you can't really get a full read as to where this team is at. You can't get a full read of Evan White at this point, mm-hmm. right? And now you're putting Kyle Lewis into that mix. So this is definitely not ideal for a team that's looking and wanting to get a lot of answers solved this season.
It's certainly not ideal. It is weird timing. It's not good timing at all. It's bad timing, but it is weird timing considering the conversations we were having about three other outfielders, right? Jared Kelnick, he is the star of your future, has not been able to really get going yet, save for 1, 2, maybe 3 great appearances. You have Mitch Haniger, who has been not just your best player, one of the better hitters in the league right now. I mean, not like at the top, but I think he's tied for 6th, if I'm thinking correctly, in home runs with 14-ish. And then you have Taylor Trammell, who was struggling at the plate in his debut, went down to the minors, was raking, and then who John Morosi said, hey, he might be a trade piece for some teams looking for some outfield talent as they go down the stretch, who are planning on making the playoffs this year and who are maybe just 1 or 2 depth pieces removed. That changes this year for all three of those guys, Jake, whether it's more or less pressure, whether it's trading or not trading. Without Kyle Lewis, and I know the Mariners are not contending this year, without Kyle Lewis, I think it becomes much harder to trade Mitch Haniger or potentially even to send Trammell or Kelnick back down for an extended period of time.
It does. It does put you in a really tough spot because you don't have the depth. You don't have the quality out there in the outfield in order to feel comfortable putting those guys down. So it does put more pressure on them to have to remain at the big league level. There's no doubt about it. And particularly in Jared Kelnick's case, I don't believe that they are looking to go down that road with him anytime soon. But Stacey, as I evaluate what the current situation is for them, yeah, I mean, Mitch Haniger is somebody that if you were thinking about trading him, which I am firmly against, don't do it. I would be furious. I think it's made it very clear at some point you need to stake your flag down and say, we are going to have some proven veterans on this team that are going to help us win ball games. You know, not just this year, but down the road, as we're coming out of this process. And Mitch Haniger is certainly one of those players in my mind. But it does put you in an even worse spot if you were thinking about trading Mitch Haniger, because now are you going to go with the remaining months of the season with somebody like Donovan Walton or, you know, just any utility guy that you can possibly fit in there to replace Mitch Haniger at that and fill that void for the time being? I just think it would be too much. So, yeah, it puts a lot of pressure on a lot of plans that maybe they were having along the way. And it certainly puts, I believe, more pressure on Jared Kelnick and Taylor Trammell. And when I say pressure, it doesn't mean expectations. It doesn't mean the weight of the world goes on those two guys' shoulders. It just means the pressure is on for them to perform and not be a major liability so that the team can keep them at the big league level.
Well, and Kyle Lewis was heating up, right? He was becoming one of their more consistent hitters in an offense that ranks, what, 30th in OPS and I think like 29th in average, something like that, near the bottom of the league in most offensive categories. He was one of their better hitters in that lineup. So it does increase the pressure a little bit for someone to do something because you've got so little of it elsewhere. Now, here's another question. Does this set the Mariners back a year in their rebuild? We know that COVID made things different. We know COVID set it back in a way that, to be quite frank with you guys, I think I was saying would happen and wasn't actually anticipating would completely underestimating what the lack of a minor league season would do for those prospects, which seems stupid. But I think we just thought like, well, it's a shorter season anyways. Those guys can still get work in. How far away are they really? Nope, it set them back. Does this increase that?
It could, but honestly, I don't think it will. It all depends on if Kyle Lewis is able to come back at the end of the season, Stacey. What you hope with this team, although you're dealing with injuries now and it's been an absolute brutal ride up to this point, is what you hope is that the team can get healthy at the right time, that they can get healthy post-July and in August and September, and you really get a chance to see this team healthy and performing well. I want to see Jared Kelnick hopefully performing better to end the season than where he is at right now. Evan White, hopefully he can develop and blossom into the end of the year. You can insert any name that is in this process that the Mariners are evaluating or hoping will be a part of this rebuilding process or this, you know, the names that will help them get to winning down the road and become a true contender, that they're starting to play better ball at the end of the season. I still think there's a chance for that to be the case, for Kyle Lewis to come back at the end of the year, finish it healthy, finish on a positive note, but that all remains to be seen. And if you're not having Kyle Lewis out there, and if he's now a piece that you have to be worried about and now in front of mind, as we had Jason Churchill on last week, as he said to us, it's not a guarantee that Kyle Lewis ends up working out. Right? It's almost something that we kind of put in the back of our mind, like, oh, we don't have to worry about K. Lou. You know, the promise is there, the excitement's there. But he's still a young player that has a lot to prove. He has yet to finish an entire season healthy, an entire season of work. So those are all things that factor into the equation. So do I think it sets them back? Not necessarily, but it certainly leaves everything, it keeps the question marks there a little bit longer than anticipated.
Well, and then there's question marks about if there is any impact on other outfield prospects, namely Julio Rodriguez. And I've already seen someone texting in on the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710, does this speed up or force their hand to bring up Julio Rodriguez? I don't think it does, personally.
No, no, no.
Right. I don't think, if they were really one piece removed from being a contender and they thought, okay, maybe Julio's ready, maybe we can get him up here and he's the difference, they aren't going anywhere. They're not contending. Like, they offensively, and you know what, for that matter, with their pitching staff, which I think is, what, 24th in ERA? Like, they're not going to be a playoff team. The hope is that you just improve. The hope is improvement, not contention. I don't think then you have to worry about speeding up Julio's progress.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, this is something that you should not even be focused or worried about or concerned about whatsoever when it comes to Julio Rodriguez. Julio Rodriguez is a prized prospect. He is special. He is a special talent. It is important. It is vital that they get this development process right for Julio Rodriguez in a way they weren't necessarily able to do with Jared Kelnick, right? I mean, this is a year that you would have liked Jared Kelnick to have at the minor league level a year ago. And so I believe that this year is extremely valuable for Julio Rodriguez as he's going through this process. And hopefully they move him up at some point in time. I don't know why he's still at the high A level at this point. I'd like to see him up at the double A level at least, to continue his growth and challenge him more and more. But Julio Rodriguez, I would not anticipate seeing him until next year.
All right, and we also got some sound from Jerry Dipoto about what they plan to do with Jared Kelnick if they've entertained the idea of sending him back down anytime soon. We are going to jump into that with our guest at 11:30. So before we get to any of it, it's 11:15. That means it's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
All right, so with all the injuries happening to the Mariners, Brent Stecker of 710sports.com does a great job. Came up with this theory, I think, what was it, 2016 or 2017, of the trident that the Mariners wore on their hats in spring training of that year, and then a bunch of injuries like what we're seeing right now. started to happen. Now they have the Trident Lounge in left field or whatever it's called.
Brent is so sold on it. Can I just say that? Like, Brent, at first, when I was still in the digital department and I was Brent was my editor, I thought he was kidding. And then he talked about it for like 45 minutes and I was like, oh, no. Brent is serious. Like, he is trying to sell me on this because, like, he's convinced.
Yes, he is very serious about it. And now we have the Trident just looking over T-Mobile Park in upper left field. So I ask you guys, are you starting to buy into Brent Stecker's theory of the Mariners Trident curse?
Yes.
No. No. I'm sorry. Yes. I don't buy into it, but here's the thing. If there is something out there that is creating bad vibes and bad juju for this team, even if it's even a thought, get rid of it. Get rid of it. If there is a section of the fan base, if this is even a possibility, it's not worth it. It's not worth having it in our ballpark.
I would just like to point out that Jacob Tyler Heaps thinks Sasquatch could be real, but doesn't think that a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in 20 years is potentially cursed.
Could.
What, DJ? Come on.
Sasquatch is more real. Who put a curse on the Mariners?
I don't know who bothered
to put a curse on the Mariners?
The Mariners put it on themselves. They did it to themselves by flipping that trident. I don't know. I'm slowly buying into it because I'm trying to find any other logical explanation for why the Mariners have just been exactly where they are forever. 20 years. 20 years. You didn't even, like, accidentally fall backwards into the playoffs. Like, I don't know how you do that. It's frankly really impressive. Like, that is quite a feat. They should be proud of themselves. How is that not, like, weird coincidence? It is weird.
How dare you attack Sasquatch?
I'm just Lydia texted us the other day and was like, we were all joking about the Trident theory, and she was like, according to Brent, it is the laws of the sea. And I've been trying to look into this to find the legal background, and I can't find any evidence supporting it outside of laws of the sea. So congratulations, Brent. The theory is hard to disprove, so I got to buy into it. I got to go with the Stecker theory on this one.
Number two.
I'm starting to think like an Astros fan, like broke in and like buried a trash can like on the field or something. That's what I'm starting to think happened. Question two, is the Seahawks on paper better or worse than they were in 2020?
Are they better or worse as a whole or on defense?
It says here as a whole, let's go with as a whole.
As a whole, I believe they're better as a whole in 2020. I believe that the little tweaks, and that's the key, they didn't make massive, big wholesale changes outside of the offensive coordinator. They made tweaks. They replaced. And to me, what they have done, I believe, are upgrades over what they had last year. Gabe Jackson over Mike Iupati. Gerald Everett over Greg Olsen. I believe that Shane Waldron will eventually be better than what they had. Dwayne Eskridge over David Moore. Not a shot at David Moore, but that's just how high I am on Dwayne Eskridge and what he can bring to the table this season. So overall, I like the tweaks that they have made. I like the adjustments that they've made defensively in terms of investing more, adding more depth to the defensive line. So I'm going to say yes.
Someone texted in, calling our previous conversation a new low for the show.
Oh,
a new low?
I think we've been lower than that. Quite honestly.
Yeah, trust me, we've been much lower than that.
Are the Seahawks better on paper? Yeah. It depends on how high you were on Shaquille Griffin and Jaron Reed, which I think are their two biggest losses. If you were really high on Jaron Reed and thought Shaquille Griffin was so much better than his performance last year, then they took a step back and they have a lot to prove, though the pieces with which they can prove. I think, though, I personally feel that they're better just with the OC addition, which, look, even though he's untested, and we're going to get into this conversation later, Schottenheimer and Carroll were not working together. It was a mess at the end of the season, and you can't tell me that was just personnel. It felt like just two different directions, and everyone was lost. That was a problem that needed to be fixed, and we don't know if it's totally fixed, but it's at least been an attempt to remedy this offseason, which you have to say is better.
Number three.
Okay, so forgive me. I do not have cable, so I had to watch the NHL draft lottery by following a bunch of streams on the Twitch app. And
wow.
It was really funny because all these streamers
who does
were these hardcore hockey fans, and they already just absolutely hate the Kraken. They hate them for having the third best odds
in
the
draft.
They're saying like, oh, it's gonna be like Vegas. Vegas didn't deserve to get to the final. Like they're
you sound like lime green jelly beans.
Yes, a lot of curse words being used. So do you guys like it when your favorite teams are hated outside the city, or would you rather have them be respected?
No, I want them to be hated. I want it to be where there is, let's say it's the Seahawks. I want there to be like it was with the Patriots, where there's this big graph of like who's rooting for who in this Super Bowl. And it's like the New England area is the only one rooting for the Patriots. I want that for the Seahawks. I want that for the Kraken. I want that eventually for the Mariners. Like I want to be, you are only hated when you're good.
Yes.
You're only accused of cheating when you're good. You know what I mean? And so I'm fine with it. I don't want people to be like, good for them. Who wants that? No one wants that in life. Imagine saying that to you at any moment. Oh, good for you. Oh, I'm rooting for you. You'd be like, oh, no. This is bad. They're shocked I'm here.
Well, and what do you want? What do you expect, though? I mean, this is a new franchise. Where are they supposed to draft? Dead last? Are you kidding me? Like, what are you thinking? So I'm actually very surprised to hear that, DJ, and it sounds like a lot of people that you were watching just are completely irrational, because that doesn't make any sense. Of course they were going to be towards the top of the draft this year. They're an expansion team.
Yeah, I don't get that. DJ, so they're mad because the Kraken they feel are being given
I will say a lot of these fans that I was watching stream this. They were fans of teams that were also in the lottery. And they were very bitter.
They're salty.
Salty. They're very salty. But it's like, the Kraken have one player on their roster. They don't even have a head coach yet.
If it's the right player, that's all you need.
Right, exactly. But like, that's the thing. That's to Jake's point. Like, why are people so mad about that? They're an expansion team. They have one player, no head coach. Like, yeah.
You know what I hope for in the expansion, eventually through the draft and in the expansion draft, I hope that the Kraken are so good that they just wipe the floor with whoever the teams they were rooting for and prove them right, that it becomes just like Vegas, because that would be A-okay with me.
I don't want to freak anyone out, but there is a chance they could have some Trident imagery in promotional things. And I just think I'm just putting that out there, that's maybe not the best way to get off the ground,
Stacey,
and to get things started, Stacey, here. That's all I'm saying.
We're not doing this.
We already had a listener accuse
us of having a low for this show. We're not going to go down this road again, okay?
I can get lower. I can make the show worse. Dare me, Jake. All right.
I refuse. I don't want to go down that road.
What do the M's do with Jared Kelnick? Jerry DePoto answered that question earlier today. We're also going to bring on a special guest to tell us what he thinks. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
We have two awesome guests for you guys today. Seahawks tight end Will Dissly going to be joining us at 1 p.m. You're not going to want to miss that. And joining us now, our first guest, it was a surprise. It's the Groz. Hope you didn't forget, because he's here. Get it? It was a forgot about Dre. Kind of thing. Did you see what I did?
Yeah, nice.
Okay, well, anyways.
Well done. You sound like Dre and Eminem themselves.
Exactly. Groz is here, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hello, Groz. How are you?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Well, we got some not so great news about the Mariners this morning. Kyle Lewis could miss the rest of the season, still up in the air. I do want to talk about that. I'm going to jump to it in a minute, because first, I want to get your thoughts on what you think the Mariners should do with Jared Kelnick right now.
Hitting 111, not good in any league, and it just speaks to the Mariners' bad luck they've had over the past 20 years, that nothing is ever easy and nothing ever works out right. I mean, Kevin Mather doesn't start this by talking. There's maybe no pressure to bring him up, which they may have nodded to, but everyone's going to think that they did. Now it feels like it's difficult to send him down, even though he does not appear to be ready yet. I don't think he gains anything by sitting on the bench. and watching. I mean, so that's no good. So I think that they've got to swallow hard and send him back down, because I don't think he's right now looking like a guy who can hit major league hitting. Pitching.
So, Graz, you think that at this point in time, it would be the best thing for him to get sent back down, not to wait any, not to give it any more time, to, you know, wait 2 weeks from now, a month from now. The best thing to do would be to stick him down in AAA at this point.
I just not seeing anything, Jake, that makes me think that he's on the verge, that it's about to shake loose, and mm-hmm. You know, you look for some stuff, some signs of that, and just I just don't see it. So yeah, I mean, they're thinking about it now. I have no doubt, and it all depends on what they've got available, and certainly this Kyle Lewis circumstance can definitely change it, because all of a sudden there's different availabilities. So they may need to leave him up here for a while. But if it were me, I think that he's shown that he's not quite ready to hit major league pitching yet.
Jerry DePoto, I'm going to play this cut for you quickly this morning with Danny and Gallant, asked about Kelnick's mindset right now, had this to say.
You could see the frustration starting to build up, especially with this last series with the A's. And it's frustrating for a player who is used to, I mean, he's not used to getting a hit a night. Mm-hmm. He's used to getting multiples. And you know, for him to go out and go through a stretch like this, where he's now, you know, it's a dry spell north of 20 plate appearances. I was proud of him in the first game of the Oakland series for going up there and taking his walks. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's it's the key. That's how you get out of these things, is you see pitches.
Graz, I know that Kelnick, who he is as a player is obviously highly touted, but the confidence sure. he brings, also something that everyone mentions when you talk about Kelnick, pretty much the first thing they say is he's a guy that doesn't lack for confidence. Do you see that at all suffering, or potentially suffering with this stretch, or is that something else you consider when you send him down?
I think you definitely consider it, and I would ask you the same question. I mean, do you think that we've seen the same confident guy that we saw, say, in the first two games, just in body language and things like that? And you know, I DePoto put it mildly. I mean, he's frustrated, and I imagine he's extremely frustrated. And that's the other thing for a lot of these guys. This is the first time that it, quote unquote, hasn't worked for them, and that's something to go through as well. So. I do think that's a huge factor. And look, I mean, if he is truly, you know, not shaken by it, just like, I'll snap out of this thing, and is, you know, ungodly mature about the whole thing, then you'd have, and that would be something that only they would know. Then, you know, you don't make the move. But I just don't see what good he's getting right now, and I just don't see him making any sense for him to sit down. Again, the Kyle Lewis injury may make things different, but it looks to me like, if it were me, like, I'll say it again, I would probably say that I've seen enough right now. You got to go down and straighten a few things out and then come back up.
Graz, going back to what you just said about the Kyle Lewis situation, where does that put your faith in this rebuilding process? Not as a whole necessarily, but in terms of it being close, in terms of them being close to getting on the other side of this?
Well, let's be honest, Jake. I mean, we're talking about a crushing blow with Kyle Lewis going down. I mean, this is a guy who was Rookie of the Year last year, who they envisioned as a middle of the lineup player with good pop and you know, all the skills needed, and was a good defensive outfielder as well. But I mean, his bat was what was so spectacular last year, and now you've taken it out. So this was a guy you were really, you know, after the injury he had in the spring, really counting on to be a big time contributor for you because of what he had done. So it definitely puts a pallor on this year, because you don't really have anyone in the organization that's ready to replace him. You just don't. I mean, he, like I said, he was Rookie of the Year last year. You're not carrying another Rookie of the Year in your hip pocket, it doesn't seem, right now. So this is a real excuse me. This one really hurts in terms of the rebuilding for this year. I mean, it really hurts this year.
In your mind right now, is there any long term fear you have about Lewis, or is it just, hey man, it's a bummer for him. He just seems to be kind of snake bitten these last couple of years.
It's a great question, Stacey, because, I mean, what you got to look up is what kind of injury is this, and has he had this kind of an injury before? Is this the sort of injuries that have set him back in the past? You know, he obviously fought through a whole lot to get here, as we know. So, you know, a little bit of research and seeing if this is the same thing that's been bothering him in the past. If not, then I think you just chalk it up to unfortunate circumstance and look forward to next year. But another thing is that, you know, the Mariners have right in front of them the example of a guy, you know, if you hang with him and you go through tough times, it can really pay off for you at the end. And, you know, Mitch Haniger missed nearly two seasons and has come back to all-star caliber. So, you know, that you can definitely hope that that's the case for Lewis, but it's really hard to paint that one up and make it look good. It was a really rough move.
Speaking of Haniger, we've been having a debate. I mean, it's not a debate since both Jake and I agree that they shouldn't, but what would you do with Haniger come this trade deadline?
I'm with you guys. He stays. I mean, I think you got to have something to build with. You need a veteran to build with. You've got him under contract for a couple more years before he hits free agency. He's having a terrific year and is a great guy to have around in the locker room, et cetera, et cetera. So if you think you're going to be good in a year or two, Mitch Haniger should be a part of it.
Yeah, now, the interesting aspect about this team right now is that they have been dealing with so many injuries, and you really haven't been able to truly get a read on the team thus far. Maybe individual pieces, but nothing really as a whole. I mean, Evan White is out. Now you got Justin Dunn on the IL. What is the hope for you that can make this season a positive? What would have to happen for this season to end up being a positive?
Well, it's about individuals, it feels like, at this point. So, like, for example, they bring up a Cal Raleigh, and he has a terrific rookie of the year. Maybe just has a terrific season and looks like the answer. I mean, you're looking for that. Kikuchi continues to pitch the way he's been and maybe evolves a little bit further, although he's looking awfully, awfully good. So if he can keep going the way he's going, that's a positive thing you could see. And then just, you know, making sure guys like J.P. Crawford are improving the way they're supposed to when White comes back, that he's doing okay, that Ty France find a position for him in the field to play because he's got a major league bat. So there's still plenty of things to figure out and do without. And they, you know, they were not really a favorite going into this season, Jake. This wasn't really going to be a year, it didn't look like, where they were going to contend anyway. And I got to say, the other thing too is that injuries are, as we all know, say it all at once, a part of the game. And, you know, part of being a good baseball team and a good football team and a good basketball team and a good hockey squad is having depth. And that's something that you got to build. So that's part of the buildup when that's not really paid much attention to. You know, when you get good, is you got to have parts that you can plug in when you get guys hurt. And right now the Mariners aren't there.
He is the Graz. Graz, have the rest of your, or enjoy the rest of your day. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
That sounds great. Thanks, guys.
All right. A question that was brought up after an interview we just recently heard. Here it is. Tell me what you think. 710-710. Is Julio Jones the way that you take advantage of the Seahawks Super Bowl window? That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners begin a four-game series against the Los Angeles Angels today. Justice Sheffield will be making the start tonight. First pitch is at 6:38 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 5:30 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. This hour of Jake and Stacy, by the way, is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Can I just very briefly call myself out, because I'm going to feel like it's sitting there if I don't, that when we hung up with Graz for our last segment, I started saying, well, Graz, it's a day, have a day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
I mean,
the next day.
It was all facts. I mean, today is a day, and tomorrow is also a day.
I felt like Paul Rudd and I Love You, Man, when he's like, I'll see you tomorrow, I'll see you another time.
That's right. One of my favorite all-time lines.
It's so good. That's essentially what I did when we hung up with Graz, and he will be back with us tomorrow. As a reminder for you guys, we have one other awesome guest joining us. Tight end Will Disley going to join us in just over an hour now. He'll be on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. He almost did it again at 1
he
p.m.
He will be on that Issaquah Pest Control Hotline.
And we'll be on the phone with him. And you guys can hear it because we are a sound company. That's coming your way at 1 p.m. Before we get to that, we've been talking about Julio Jones all week, and someone very recently made a really great point. Whether or not you agree with it, we're going to talk about right now, but I loved what Danny Kelly of The Ringer had to say when he was on Paul Gallant earlier this week. So he's talking about the Super Bowl window that the Seahawks have, specifically the Super Bowl window that they have with DJ, stop laughing. Can you pick up four, please?
I don't really mind them taking swings, especially with Russell Wilson getting a little bit older. I'm a pretty strong believer that you have to maximize the last couple of years of Russell Wilson's career, if that's the case, career here in Seattle anyway. If that's
the case,
he is going to have to move on, after his next contract is over. I really want to maximize the last few years. So, you know, drafting a guy in the third, fourth, fifth round and hoping he pans out. I think it's probably you're going to get quicker results if you trade for a veteran in that case.
Danny adds, hey, you don't know how much longer you're going to have Russell Wilson here, so why not go for the sure thing being Julio Jones, and make your offense a Super Bowl favorite. It doesn't make your defense better. Who knows what that's going to look like this year? Who knows if those second half changes will stick around, but your offense certainly can carry your team if you get Julio in here. Why not go for it? That's Danny Kelly's question.
Well, I think that it's an interesting question, and it also goes to the point of when you look at this particular situation for the Seahawks, are you a fan, and seriously consider this, are you a fan that desperately wants to win a Super Bowl, or are you a fan that appreciates consistent success? And I think that there's a valid point to both of them. In terms of consistent success, Stacey, how fun is it every year to feel like you're in it? How fun is it to feel like your team has the ability to win 10-plus games in the NFL when that is extremely hard to do? You're a team that's on primetime football, you know, 4 or 5 times a year, right? There's a lot, from a fan perspective, there's a lot to enjoy in that consistent run of success, knowing that you have a great chance to make the playoffs and can have, you know, your Super Bowl hopes every single year. But there is also the side of it where it's like, I would do anything for them to win a Super Bowl. I would be willing to mortgage the future for the now, because that's how badly I want to win a Super Bowl, right? There's two different mindsets and two different mentalities here. And I don't know if necessarily Julio Jones gets you that Super Bowl, but in terms of Danny Kelly bringing it up, it certainly wouldn't hurt. It certainly would make your offense more dynamic and very difficult to defend. There's no question about that. And I come from the school of thought, or the idea that, Stacey, right now, this is what we know. We know right now, there is a 3 to 5 year window when it comes to Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner. And if you're looking at Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, it's 3 years. That's what we know. That's what we have in front of us right now. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, you know, you name it. There's a specific window that you have with Jamal Adams. And are you going to take advantage of that while Pete Carroll is your head coach? I think that is important. I think it would be ultimately be a failure if this group is not able to win a Super Bowl here in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years.
This is only the case if Julio Jones is the missing piece that's keeping you from a Super Bowl. Is an elite wide receiver the missing piece that's keeping you from a Super Bowl? I don't think so. I mean, Julio Jones would make your team a favorite for Super Bowl. It would make you a favorite in the NFC West, and you are not right now. It makes your roster better. It makes your offense better. I don't care what anyone says about Julio being 32 or dealing with injuries. Julio Jones makes you better, period. But I think you have other problems that if you get figured out, you can still get to a Super Bowl. Like, you should be in the playoffs this year. Your roster, headed up by Russell Wilson, headed up by Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner on the other side. You've got one of the most successful coaches, the most successful coach, winning his coach your franchise has seen. You should be in the playoffs this year, period. If you're not, it's a failure. So how about further than that? Well, what do you fix from last year? Is the difference Julio, or is the difference, hey, don't be of two minds with your offensive philosophy? Hey, maybe get this defense going sooner. Maybe have whatever your accountability meeting is before, like, October. You know what I mean? Like, you have the pieces to be good. I don't know if Julio is the single missing piece. And while I do think it would feel more satisfying to get a Super Bowl win, and would I sacrifice a couple good years for a Super Bowl win? Yes. If I'm John Schneider and my contract outlasts Russell Wilson, I'm thinking, of course you want to win this year, Russ. Of course you want to get to a Super Bowl. I don't even know if you're here in 2022. Like, why do I want to mortgage my future overseeing this team so that you can, you know, maybe get to a Super Bowl this year when I think we could get there now?
If that's the way that you're operating, and that's the way that you're thinking, that you don't know a player is going to be there in 2022, then that's a garbage way of thinking.
Why is it a garbage way of thinking? Because you would be selling out part of your future.
You have to maximize your team now. And I think that if you're looking at the way that you go about it, if you do, let's say that possibility happened, Julio Jones does indeed become a part of the team. You think Russell Wilson's going to demand a trade the following year? No, he's not going to do that. And I think that at this point, it's very unlikely that it happens unless something was to really blow up here this next season. I really don't foresee that being the case. To me, as I look at this team, I don't care. I'm sorry, John Schneider being the GM 7 years from now, what this team looks like 7 years from now. I get that that might be the mindset in which he thinks or has to think about the big picture of stuff. That's why he's the GM. That's why Pete Carroll, as they see things, they have to see things through the future. But there's also the reality of the window that is there now. And if you don't capitalize on it and if you don't maximize it, it is going to be a failure. And I believe that as much as they're remembered for the Legion of Boom days and the greatness that was there, not being able to capitalize. I'm talking Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, and John Schneider, Bobby Wagner, all those guys. I think the fact that you don't win in this next window would be an absolute travesty, and people will remember that as well. So I think that there is an obligation to go for it, as they always do. And I'm not saying they're not. They have made moves this year. I believe they put their team in a better position to win this year. But it can't be necessarily just about the long-term sustained success. You're going to have to continue to keep pushing the envelope, and they've shown the willingness to do that.
I'm talking about short-term success, too. If you have three high-paid wide receivers, what do you have? You have to take money out elsewhere. Whose pocket are you taking the money out of to get three of the top-paid receivers in the game if you're also going to extend DK Metcalf? I'm assuming that Russell Wilson doesn't want one Super Bowl year and then a bunch of failures. Your defense needs to be at least, like, suitable. You can't be a bottom-of-the-league defense. Then, ironically, you become Atlanta in 2016, where you're an offense that's great with Julio Jones, and your defense can't stop an opposing offense. Jake, I want to hear what you have to say about that. Pause. We're going to continue this conversation next. 710-710, Mac and Jack's text line to join the conversation with us. More of this next.